Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. We're indoors. It's thundery storms in Bondi at the moment. So rather than subject you to a microphone of crackle and wind blowing, I'll stay indoors and enjoy the warmth and comfort of my office. I want to talk today about 10 key learnings you gain by doing, by studying the power of inspiration. 10 really key things that if you practice all the arts that we teach at Inner Wealth of inspiration, you will really, really gain in your life. The first one is to tap in to the transformative potential of inspiration. It's actually what it does, it breeds a mindset of curiosity, creativity, and possibility. And I think that's really important to register a mindset of curiosity, creativity, and possibility. Now, put those three things together. Curious, creative, but also looking into the future of possibility. That holds you right there in that single one benefit or single one advantage you get from studying inspiration. It locks you into a mindset that cannot be reproduced by AI. Therefore, it's bulletproof, it's resilient, it's authentic, and people will trust it because it's human. I think you create, another one is that you create a foundation of structure and intentionality. Now, structure is underestimated in people's lives, incredibly underestimated. In my own life especially, I've, as a younger person in business and in personal life, I abhorred the idea of structure. I thought anybody who sticks to a daily routine, does the same thing day in and day out, was boring. And I even criticized my own father because he ate cornflakes for breakfast every day and a piece of toast with honey on it, and it was a particular honey that he bought, and then he had a cup of tea and it had particular milk in it with a particular amount of tea in the pot with a particular boiling kettle, and it had to be poured in a certain way or he didn't like it. And then he went off to work every single day at 8 a.m. He never failed to go up the driveway and head off to work at 8 a.m. If you wanted a lift to school, you had to be in the car. If you weren't in the car, you missed the lift. And I criticized my dear old dad, bless his soul, for a lot of those things. But as time went on, I began to appreciate that the things I liked about my dad were only available because of the things I didn't like. And those things I didn't like were that structure and routine and regimented discipline that he had, and had birthed his level of creativity, which was quite high. I missed that point, but it was there. It was quite amazing. You know, he played a mouth organ and he had an artistic flair. He never got stumped by a problem. So his creative art was available to him only because he had the structure there. And intentionality, what a great word. The foundation of structure and intentionality. What's your intent? And my intent, or the one I advertise, the one I suggest and one I recommend to people, is have an intent for personal growth. I think when you grow in your professional or personal level of life, you are absolutely bypassing all the crap that most people refer to as mental health problems. You bypass taking things personally. You keep your sense of humor, because I think personal and professional growth means sometimes there's hardship, sometimes there's difficulty, but you don't need to get pinned down by it, because growth is a more important objective. The next one is embracing wonder and exploration. Now, when I first started Inner Wealth in 1986, it was a consulting firm. I had business partners, We went out and we did, I think, something like 50-odd consulting briefs in 18 months. We were swamped, and we did brilliant work, but as time went on, the collaboration between the four people who had formed the partnership started to unravel. Our trust in two of the people who owned a second-tier accounting firm in Melbourne started to diminish as they went and started to list themselves and another business they owned on the second board of the stock exchange. Our trust in their intent became less. And then the guy that I'd invited technically to join me in the business, he and I started to compete for the piece of the business that I really started the business for. And that was the presentation, the delivery of material to groups. In other words, to professionally speak as a teacher and a leader. So we decided to split it all up. And that was a really embarrassing thing, because I ended up being the outer and my business partners, the three of them, ended up continuing the business on and making many, many dollars. I actually had to pay $170,000 to exit a profitable business. And the details of that are incomprehensible, but at the time, it was worth it. So we continue on, and I continue on, and then the business became, from Bourne Griffiths, Barraclough and Walker, it became Inner Wealth when I took it on myself. And I took on the speaking, the consultative speaking part of the training and workshops and development of people in business. As it continued, one of my clients became the leading advertising firm for the ANZ Bank. And they had 90% or more of the ANZ advertising portfolio as an external firm. So this is a very, very entrepreneurial young business, and they became my client. And as a favor to me, they did they got a group, and they put them in a room, and they asked that group, a whole group, a series of questions. What would encourage you to go to a workshop run by Inner Wealth? What would encourage you to move there? And what would stop you going? And what would you say? And that, to a person, this is going back a few years, it was in the early 90s, to a person, they said the reason they would not go to a self-help workshop run by Inner Wealth, and the workshop was called Real Spirit, the reason they would not go is the fear that they would come out infatuated with the teaching and then in 6 weeks blow it up and look like an idiot. So the thing was that they didn't want to be labeled like all the friends that they'd had who'd gone to these self-help things, Landmark and the Anthony Robbins things, and gone to all these things, got wound up in it, what we call now infatuation. And then after 6 weeks, when the timeline and the memory and availability of that workshop started to diminish, they went back to who they were before the workshop. And so they just humiliated themselves. So that was the first thing. The second thing they were afraid of was any form of hero worship. Now, this test group was put on in Melbourne. And I would suspect there was a little bit of conservatism in the group that was selected, although they were diverse in their cultural and their personal backgrounds. They may have been collaborative on their conservative nature, because running retreats and workshops and self-help work in Melbourne, it's always been a little more of the establishment than it is when you go to Sydney or Brisbane or and further north, or even the US and Canada. So the end result of all this survey and all the studies they did with hundreds of people was that they were willing to go to a workshop to embrace the idea of wonder and exploration. They were willing to participate in a self-development format environment if the intent of it was to encourage wonder, which is not wonder meaning a wonder about. It was wonder meaning, wow, I wonder, you know, like the wonder of life, like Alice in Wonderland, to wonder and explore. And for many years, this was my byline, wonder and explore. And I think there are two of the most important words whenever you're presenting or leading or running a business to encourage exploration. In other words, exploration is not necessarily always adventurous. It is sometimes conservatively done. You can explore something just by researching it on Google. But when you stop exploring, when you stop exploring better ways of doing things, when you stop exploring, you die. And so this concept of sustaining exploration without taking it to the degree of going to the Antarctica in a wetsuit and swimming across the channel or something, and wonder without taking it to the degree of, you know, I wonder how the Big Bang first started. It might be going too far, but having the wonder of a mountain, being in looking at a tree and being overwhelmed by the awe and the wonder of it. I think these two words are really important to take into all our lives. And they are things that come as a consequence of being inspired. You give yourself permission to marvel at the wonders of the world and explore new avenues of thought and experience. And I think that if I could package that, I would have the self-help industry completely re-looking at itself, and rather than dictating morals and ethics and codes of behavior and values and all these things, it would encourage people to think twice, to think more, and to also wonder at the world. The next benefit of exploring and unlocking the power of inspiration is to discover strategies for sustaining inspiration over a long term. And that includes self-care, mindfulness, and personal development. But I think one of the things that becomes obvious to me is that there's a lot of people who sit around waiting for inspiration to come to them. And I think that's beautiful. You could sit on the end of your bed and stare at the ceiling, or look in your camera and look at the photos you took. You can go to the shower and just let the water run over your body, or you can, but in other words, you can allow your senses to become sensitive to the environment you're in, and by doing that, you will eventually receive inspiration. And that inspiration means your inner voice will come very loudly to you. You will be guided. However, given the amount of noise that takes place in our lives, given the amount of mind noise that comes to us, these moments of waiting and these moments of hoping that inspiration comes to us are clumsy. And I think what we can do is, rather than to get inspired by something, we can step forward and say, I'm going to do something inspiring to inspire myself. I'm going to create the circumstances and be more deliberate in the circumstances in which inspiration happens. Now, I think that is a huge leap in a person's life, because rather than go to work and say, I'm going to turn up and hope like hell my work or my boss or my friends or my colleagues or the company or something inspires me today, it's like saying, I'm going to go to work inspired and work from that place. Now, what are those conditions of sustainable inspiration? What are those conditions that keep inspiration, that keep the mind noise in a safe place where it's allowed to happen but not take over the ship? And I think there's we know that positivity, or as it's now more accurately referred to, gratitude, is one part of inspiration. A very grateful person becomes very inspired, or frequently inspired. Number two, we need authenticity. We need to really know ourselves, so we say, this is me. This is what I'm being here is not a fake, or I'm not trying to pretend I'm an actor, or pretend I'm a business leader, or pretend I'm interested in people. I actually am. And that interest, that authenticity, is a really important part of being inspired. Because it's leading by example. I think joy, there can't be a better word for that. Joy is inspiration. Joy typically comes from the witnessing of beauty, but it can come from many other things. It's not outrageous laughter. Joy isn't what they call the inner smile, the cosmic giggle. And the last word is enthusiasm. Now, it's easy to be enthusiastic for something. Like, I can be enthusiastic to go and pat the dog in the back garden, or enthusiastic to get to a coaching session on time, or enthusiastic to get to my doctor's appointment and do the right thing. But enthusiasm needs to be applied in all seven areas of life. And rather than kill one area of enthusiasm, let's say my social life, rather than to kill that in order to double up on my enthusiasm for my work, I don't want to do that. I want to remain holistically enthusiastic. And I think holistically enthusiastic encapsulates the sort of foundation or the groundswell on which you can come to life and be more inspired and have more moments of inspiration, more time in that zone. And I think that's a profound gift. I once heard a profound truth, and the profound truth is this: if you count up the number of moments you're inspired and you put them on a line, you will see either side of that line a sine wave, a wave going above the line, below the line, above the line, below the line, above the line. And the line going above and below is your emotions. But every time that line of emotions crosses the center line, you hit a moment of inspiration. So the more emotion you have, the less inspiration you have. So what we're trying to do in the inner wealth work is not eliminate the waves going either side of the line. It's just make them smaller and more frequent. So instead of having one huge sine wave that goes up for a couple of days and down for a couple of days and strikes the center line, which is, by the way, at 45 degrees to the horizontal, instead of striking that every now and again after a couple of days, we hope that every minute or every hour we are crossing that center line. And therefore, at the moment of death, what you can and will remember during the last hours before you pass are those moments of crossing. And so if you say to somebody, and I've had the great gift to be with people who are passing and help them move into the afterlife in a good place, and they recall memory, they recall moments, and they don't recall all of the big emotions that went down and they were bitter and they went up and they were elated and they went down, they were resentful and they went up and they were attracted. They don't remember it all. What they remember is about 2 hours of life, and if you really ask them about it, it becomes about 2 minutes for some people, because those moments of passing are fleeting moments of inspiration. So I really want to encourage you to have less emotion, but more moments of frequent crossing. And that's one of the things that comes from being authentic, and one of the things that we're trying to achieve in saying we want sustainable inspiration. I think creativity and innovation are going to be two of the most important words that you will hear for the next 20 years of your life. And the reason for this is, they are human. Creativity, you can ask AI now to draw you a picture. You can ask it to make you a movie. You can ask it to act a character. You can say, draw me Tom Hanks, and it will draw Tom Hanks. Make Tom Hanks speak in Tom Hanks' voice, and it will. Give it to text and say, make Tom Hanks say this about me, and it will. And to the observer on a TV screen or a computer screen, they cannot tell that you've invented Tom Hanks or whoever. They do it in pornography and all sorts of things right now. So that's actually happening, and it's there and it's in place and it's cheap. So the question is then, why do you need a person to come to work? If you can invent a character and tell the character to do something at work that is now currently very much in the hands of an individual, you can take it out of the hands of an individual as long as there's not creativity and innovation built into it. Now, you can say to AI to innovate, But to what? To what end is it innovating? You can actually give it an instruction to innovate towards something. Now you've become the creative source that dictates to AI what you want. And so AI will be at the mercy of creativity and innovation over the next 20 years. And that stuff, creativity and innovation, comes from being inspired. Self-expression, confidence to express yourself authentically, whether it's in writing or speaking or any other forms of expression, with a full grasp on the emotional keyboard of life, to be able to go where it needs to go, to have other people understand and respect the vision or the inspiration that you have in life. Coming from an inspired place becomes much more natural and much more easy. So self-expression is a profound benefit of being inspired. Resilience and overcoming challenges. Well, look, who doesn't want that? I would say since I became inspired in life and learnt the skills of staying close to that line I talked about earlier, I have had the resilience of a horse. I've gone through, when I was 30 years old or 34, I went through a divorce, took me 3 years to recover from it. And in that 3 years, I was really not in a healthy place for myself, for my children, for my family, for my friends, for anyone. And I was more like being rescued by people rather than delivering profound leadership and knowledge. Lucky for me, I went to, that was the period I did my MBA, the 2 years. And if I was ever to be nuts in my life and struggle with my life, it was while I was back at uni doing that. It was a kind of coincidence of good timing and good decision making on my part not to work. But I think what I learned through doing the Zen and all the ingredients of inner wealth, the psychology and the mind management and the laws of nature and the Himalayan experience and the yoga, what I've learned by compiling all that together is to stay inspired and therefore have resilience and therefore overcome challenges quicker. Now, in my previous live-in relationship, the relationship ended on a Monday, and by the Wednesday, I was happy and gay and joyful and inspired again. And I think that just shows that the only thing that really changed in that period between the first relationship and 3 years recovery and the last relationship and 3 minutes recovery, let's say 3 days, is how much inspiration I have in my life, how much commitment I have to wondering and exploring, how much I am dedicated to sustaining that inspiration and becoming authentic in my life. So there are two of the last things that I want to say come from commitment to your inner wealth, to being inspired, to having your inner voice work. The second last one, or as they say in bike riding language, the penultimate one, is inspiring others. I made a choice way back when I said the Bourne Griffiths Barraclough Walker business closed and I started Inner Wealth to become a professional speaker, to speak to business leaders about leading their businesses in a better way and to lead themselves in a better way, because you can't give what you haven't got, and how can you lead businesses in a better way if you're not leading your own life in an inspired, happy way. And I made a decision, therefore, to dedicate my life to that. That was at a great cost, because the most profitable path I could have taken at that time was to either stay in Bourne Griffiths Barraclough Walker or to go back to Lure Filter, the engineering firm that I'd built, and not sell my shares back to the German licensee, not to sell them to my business manufacturing production manager. I could have held on to that and kept on making the millions that business provided, but I didn't. I made a decision that I wanted to inspire others. And that's one of the consequences of the maturation that comes when you get inspired. Different things drive you. Different aspects of life start to become much more clear, much more important. Your values become really clear to you, and you don't just go to work and wake up in the morning and earn enough money to buy another mortgage or renovate another house or put a swimming pool in, or, as we did, tennis courts and swimming pools in the backyard, and buy fancy cars. And you head down a path and you're going, I'm earning more and more money, I'm building bigger and bigger houses, I've got more and more children, I'm doing more and more social responsibility, but I'm bloody happier and happier less. And there comes a turning point where you go, you know what, I'm now a driven person by trying to inspire others. And if I make money in the process of doing that, that's fantastic. That's spectacular. And I want to make money as a professional speaker. I don't want to be doing that on the basis of poverty. I'm speaking to relatively wealthy people all over the world. So how could I be not in their enclave? But at the same token, that's not what inspires me to speak the next words when I'm standing on a stage or doing a workshop or coaching somebody. What I'm doing is inspiring others. And I think that's one of the consequences of developing your own inspiration. Your true values start to morph or come out of you, like almost like you start to ooze the internal world out into the external, and then they can both collaborate. Head, heart can work hand in hand. Last but not least, I think one of the most important things that came in my life in the process of seeking to live inspired was creating a life of purpose, but at the same token, fulfillment. Purpose has a sense of futurism in it, which says I'm really looking forward to the future I'm creating for myself and others. And that's that, what did we say before, that intentionality. The intent is the future. But I don't want to live a life that's not fulfilled. And fulfillment comes from the present. So with Inner Wealth, and even the book I wrote back in 2000, it's called Inner Wealth, Putting the Heart and Soul Back into Business. Hard to get now, a hard copy. They're $60-$70 online. You can get a Kindle copy, or I can give you a free copy if you ask me. But the bottom line is that vision, inspiration, purpose. Vision, intention. Your intentionality must be paramount. So most of what I've talked about here, nurturing sustainable information, becoming authentic, cultivating creativity, mastering expression, unlocking the powers that you have in you, all of that comes from vision. The middle one, inspiration, which sort of sounds weird because we're talking here about inspiration, but vision and inspiration becomes absolutely the core of it all. You can't really live the vision if you don't have inspiration, and you can't really live the purpose if you don't have inspiration. And inspiration centers around this moment in time in your life, right now. I need nothing, I want nothing, I have everything. Ultimately, what you're trying to do is to understand how this moment in time is absolutely a moment of wonder. Absolutely a moment of wonder. There is wonder in every moment of life. And wonder leads to fulfillment. And a fulfilled person is still enthusiastic, engaged, has a massive intentionality about the future, but they have the structure, which is fulfillment, on which it's built, on which the future gets built. And that's what I think is the most important thing about seeking to be an inspired individual. Well, I think that's a long podcast for today. I hope you've enjoyed it in the peace and quiet of a non-windy office. Have a great day. Bye for now.